Hello, Drew. Drew, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, I'm John. Hi. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. I mean, you're welcome.
Thanks. Thanks.
Sorry,
that's great.
I'm kinda nervous.
That's okay. That's all right. Don't be nervous. Just be yourself. Read the lines, and we'll take it from there.
Okay.
So whenever you're ready.
Should I just start from?
Yeah. Yeah. Just go ahead. Pretend like we've just given you the next line, and you're gonna take it from there.
From the top of this.
From
page?
The top. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
From the top. Very and top.
I should be thinking like I'm old.
Yeah. You know what? Don't worry about that. Don't.
Wiser.
Just look at the lines and see what the lines tell you.
Okay.
Let them guide you.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Droid. I don't remember ever owning a droid.
I think I may have actually got that wrong. If I could, can I take that one more time?
Yeah, that'd be great. That would be great. Yeah. Whenever you're ready.
I don't remember ever owning a droid.
Interesting. Okay. Can you give it to me one more time?
Yeah.
This time, though, I want you to say it with more midichlorians.
I'm Drew.
And I'm John.
And you're listening to The Hourcast, our ever-growing library of everything, one hour at a time.
The wait is over. The decision has been made.
Oh, yeah. And I think I know where you're going.
The candidate has been selected.
It's very, you don't know it, but it's very appropriate that you use the word candidate.
Candidate. It
candidate.
Is. Candidate.
But I can't say why for the fear of spoiling
candidates
for our listeners.
Yeah. All right.
But I'll tell you after the podcast why it's appropriate that you would have used that word.
Well, I look forward to hearing that.
The candidate has been chosen.
The candidate has been selected from a vast pool. Well, maybe not so vast.
A seemingly vast pool, but left and right, people are like, no, no.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
Shooting down, shooting down. I wouldn't touch that with a
if I had time.
Lightsaber.
Yeah. I don't want to watch it, but I'll be first in... Or I don't want to make it, but I'll be first in line to watch it.
That's going to turn out like crap, but I'd definitely make it. Yeah. We're recording this on the... Is it today was the actual day it was confirmed?
It was either today or yesterday.
Yesterday.
I mean, within the... if it wasn't today, it was very recent that Disney confirmed...
Confirmation official that a director has been chosen
to Star Wars
shepherd us into the next era of disappointment.
Trilogic disappointment
universe.
Right?
Yeah, yeah,
but maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe it will work out. But that's not what we're necessarily talking about. But we're talking about the vast pool,
the names that were bandied about.
Yeah.
Well, and we, you know, the name that was chosen in the end was J.J. Abrams.
Right.
To which many people are like, oh, he can't. How can he? He's already doing Star Trek.
And yeah.
It's like, you know what? Hollywood doesn't care about your nerd rules. You know what I mean?
You've been wanting to say that, haven't you? You've just been storing that one up.
Well, you don't know how many times I've heard people say, why you can't do both?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you can.
Actually,
you know
they
what?
Are two separate
they
movies.
They want to make money.
Completely unrelated. Yeah. And he's a bankable name.
Right.
Period.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't think Hollywood cares.
Yeah.
In fact, Hollywood knows, and quite rightly, that Star Trek nerds will go to a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
So it was probably a pretty smart choice. I think we'll find...
It was definitely a smart choice in terms of a financial decision.
I mean,
they're absolutely... Not that they really even needed it, but...
Yeah.
you know, they're going to get
sort of a what's that? There's that foregone French phrase.
Conclusion.
Yeah,
it's a French phrase.
No, I literally just heard this like last night. Somebody said it's a. Yeah. And then they said the phrase in French,
right.
And then somebody else said, yeah, foregone conclusion.
Right.
So it was like the reverse.
That's so
when
awesome.
When you're like, foregone conclusion, yeah, French phrase.
But yeah, that movie, Episode 7, people are going to be going to see it, regardless of who directed it. I don't think it could have been, you know, like Kim Kardashian directs Episode 7 and people would go see that movie, maybe even more so.
Yeah, I would honestly be more curious about it, I think.
But you know, all these names were thrown around as far as directors.
The biggies.
Yeah, and especially the current biggies.
Yeah.
So, of course, the first name that everyone went to, given that it's a Disney property now, right, was Joss Whedon, because he had just done The Avengers, which is also a Disney property now.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone's like, well, he's already got this relationship with Disney. He's made them a ton of money with Avengers. So
he's bankable.
He's
doesn't have anything going on. He's just sitting around reading
Plus,
comic books.
He's got an immense amount of nerd cred.
Yeah.
Plus the series Firefly and the movie Serenity under his belt. So we know that he can make a space opera.
Right.
Type of, you know, format. So everyone's like, oh, it's got to be Joss Whedon. But of course it's not going to be Joss Whedon. Come on.
Yeah, well, you got to wonder. I mean, I there's no telling this should be our caveat here.
Who?
And this is maybe a
caveat
good way of moving away from the Star Wars component of this discussion. Nobody knows. Well, Disney
knows. The Shadow
but
knows.
Nobody, Alec Baldwin?
He'll play, he's going to play an aged Han Solo.
We don't know who they actually approached about this. Who they might have said, would you be interested in doing this? But speculation about, you know, if you're making arguably the biggest movie ever... You know, potentially the biggest movie ever.
Right.
What has the promise to be the biggest movie ever?
One of the most anticipated movies ever.
Right. You think that the people that you go to are probably all going to fit within this common
set of parameters.
Yeah. You know, like there are names that you go to first.
Right.
And there are names that you don't go to first. And we're talking about the names that you would go to first in that scenario.
Right.
And Joss Whedon is I think, ideal. I mean, I would kind of put him and Abrams on par very, very close to each other. They're sort of not mirrors of each other, but I feel like they're, you know, they've both done a variety of stuff. You know, they're not the same type of dude. They don't just... direct movies.
Yeah,
they've done other stuff.
There's clearly, they are both clearly people who want to change up what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at any given moment. The interesting thing about Whedon is that he didn't have the name recognition that he had before. You know, he had no, like, outside of the nerd universe, had no name recognition in the mainstream until Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't really have like a major blockbuster.
He was in no way established in Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, I think he was probably established within the system. I think people knew who he was.
Yeah.
But he wasn't
a proven...
Right, yeah. He didn't have box office value. His name didn't have box office value until Avengers.
And now it's
like huge box office value. Yeah. He's got, what do they call it when you're like... political capital, candidate. Here we just when you're coming off a big win, you know, and you can kind of play it a little bit looser than you normally would.
They call that.
I think it's political capital. So in this case, he's got box office capital, le box office capital. He's got clout that he can spend.
Yeah, he does.
You know,
he
could choose instead of doing another Marvel movie. He could choose to be like, well, there was a character in the second season of Buffy who was made out of shoehorns and twist ties.
Well, he's using and that he could to, do it, to some degree because he made, like in a weekend, he made a, I think it's either Much Ado About Nothing or some Shakespeare play.
Oh, I thought that was already under the in the can when he made Avengers, or when Avengers came out.
I thought it was after Avengers, but I might.
It may
be
have
wrong.
Been released after Avengers.
I don't think it's even been released.
Oh,
has
really?
It?
Huh? Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, so he either shot before or after, right? Either right before or right after he okay. did this Much Ado About Nothing with a really small cast. I think it's Much Ado About Nothing. Mm-hmm. It's a Shakespeare play.
I think it is.
With a small cast of people, you know that he. It's,
yeah.
It's classic. Sort of Whedon cast.
And he like
members.
Shot it in his garage, right?
Yeah, something.
Am I
like
making that.
That
up? Maybe.
Well, he I think he approached it in the same way that he approached the Dr. Horrible series, mm-hmm. where he tried to do it all himself.
Yeah.
You know, without sort of studio backing.
So did oh well I will openly admit right now that I am not a Joss Whedon devotee.
You're not a Whedonite.
I'm
Whedonite.
Not. I follow his stuff to yeah. a certain degree, but I'm not invested in it
sure,
a lot.
Sure.
But I have seen Dr. Horrible, and I know a little bit about Dr. Horrible, mm-hmm, but I don't mm-hmm. know the whole story about Dr. Horrible. So this was, it was a Writers Guild strike.
The Writers Strike was in full effect.
Right.
And
I can't hear that phrase without thinking of Vanilla Ice. Sorry. But anyway.
You know, I'm not sure what the impetus was. I think he basically took this as an opportunity, and he thought, you know, let's try to make something, you know, and the people who are making it are people who love it and mm-hmm. just want to make it. They're not getting paid.
Right.
And I think people just didn't get paid.
Yeah.
He basically, you know, got his friends together that are in the industry, and it was an experiment both in, you know, self-production mm-hmm. of can I put all this together and can it be successful without any kind of, you know, backing.
Without doing the regular, the formula.
Right.
You know,
it was basically like Joss Whedon funded everything that he could.
Right.
And asked favors for everything else, from what I understand.
Yeah.
So it was an experiment in that realm. And then also it was an experiment in... It was only available online.
Right.
Initially.
That's right. And it was like serialized. So it wasn't, you know, it, you couldn't watch it all at once initially.
It's a lot like, it was a lot like a Kickstarter project with one funder. And that was Joss Whedon. You know,
right.
Like he had this idea, he funded it, he got all his friends to help. And then, you know, I'm sure he was saying to his friends, like, look, if this is successful, we'll all get rewarded.
Yeah.
You know, if
yeah.
it's not, we had fun for a weekend.
Yeah.
You know?
We hung out. We made the thing.
And so, yeah, it went online and there, he teased it at one point. He was like, I've got this thing. It's going to be online only. Here's the date it's coming out. Mm-hmm. And over the span of, I think, 6 days or so, he released three parts, a three part sort of series called Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog. It was a weird confluence of a lot of things because he wanted to do a musical. He wanted mm-hmm. to do it online. He wanted to do it with no, you know, support other than him and his friends.
Right.
And it was hugely successful. I mean, because one, he has the following that he has, right?
Yeah. I think that is a major,
that
major
a
component.
Huge component.
He already had a following.
He has a devoted.
And they were all internet
base.
Nerds.
Yeah. And this is also coming off of the heels. To some degree, a Firefly, which
right.
you know, had a huge movement to try to save mm-hmm. and didn't work out, you know, and then they had the movie and the movie was not financially successful.
Right.
So I'm sure there's a lot of like pent up, like we want to support Joss Whedon because we love the things he makes and it's not fair, you know.
Right.
And so they came in to really support and help market Dr. Horrible, and then Dr. Horrible was very successful, and they put it on iTunes, and it was successful, and then they released a DVD mm-hmm. that was successful, and they put a commentary track that is a musical over it.
Oh, nice. with all of the people?
With all the cast members. Up. So there's two commentaries. There's a real, real commentary of,
right.
you know, they just doing a commentary. And then there's a second commentary called Commentary the Musical.
And they actually sing the
and
whole
And there's
thing?
A bunch of new songs on it. And so he has a devoted audience, but it's relatively a small audience compared to, you know, your mm-hmm. audience for, like, The Dark Knight, right?
Right, yeah.
And now he has a huge, I'm sure, audience. Like, he has name recognition now.
Yeah. Yeah, he's big now.
Laundry day, see you there, under things, tumbling, wanna say, love your hair, here I go, mumbling, with my freeze ray I will stop the world, with my freeze ray I will find the time to find the words to tell you how you make me feel, what's the phrase, like a fool, kinda sick, special needs, anyways, with my freeze ray I will stop the pain, it's not a death ray or an ice beam that's all Johnny Snow, I just think you need time to know that I'm the guy to make it real, the feelings you don't dare to feel, I'll bend the world to our will, and we'll make time stand still.
How do we get Big on guy. This?
How
I mean,
do we
I
get
know
on?
We, I know our subject is directors, but how did we get to Dr. Horrible? So he did that, you know, back when he did it, and now I think he probably really enjoyed doing that, and so that's why he did the Shakespeare thing,
uh-huh.
and it was really like secret for a while. I mean, there were there was in fact one point where I think he tweeted or one of the cast members tweeted a photo of Nathan Fillion and Sean Marr, who both of them were in Firefly, and everyone freaked out like, "Oh my God, Firefly!
It's a Firefly!
Coming back.
Yeah." Oh man, I'm just that to me, like that sounds like a fun like Friday night just to like start Firefly rumors. And
it's easy to do.
Yeah, really. People are so rabid for
it. Oh yeah. Yeah. Just can't wait for it. but I find him very compelling to listen to when he talks about film or writing or anything like that. Like he has a very
I think it has helped him to have a lot of losses.
Yeah.
You know, he has a really unique perspective on things that, you know, comes out of, I think, having to compromise again and again and again, mm-hmm. you know, first with Buffy and then to have that string of
just like
technically losers, if you count them strictly by the numbers,
right.
you know, one after another, shows that just didn't succeed,
right.
Dollhouse,
yeah.
and then Firefly. He had another one recently too. I thought that he was involved in that, didn't succeed.
Hmm.
After Firefly,
that was Dollhouse.
Oh, okay.
Dollhouse followed. So his TV trajectory, if I can get this right, Buffy was the first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he did Angel, which is a spinoff of Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
Those two ran for quite a while.
Those were I think everybody recognizes those as successes. Yeah.
And then he did,
Firefly.
I feel like I'm forgetting a show, and then Dollhouse.
Okay.
And then also he had a foray, he wrote Alien Resurrection, which was completely sort of butchered by the
time
he wrote it and, you know, he handed it off and then. From what I understand, the actual film bears very little resemblance to his script. But the interesting thing is you can see sort of hints of Firefly in that movie, you know, in terms of this crew and the sort of dingy space kind of aesthetic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another, you know, that sort of falls in line with what you're saying, where he's had to compromise so much.
Yeah.
at that point.
And he's seen his stuff get kind of twisted. Yeah. And yeah.
But how did he get Avengers?
Well, he had some comic book work. I know that.
Like, oh, that's
he,
right.
He, yeah, wrote, he wrote the Astonishing X-Men.
Astonishing X-Men.
Right. So he was probably, he was already on Marvel's radar.
Yeah.
And Marvel, I think, now is more or less calling the shots on a lot of that. So, and I think they probably recognized, you know, this is a good way to bridge these two together.
Yeah.
You know, you get the TV fans, you get the comic book nerds, which if there's anybody who's like worse than like internet TV nerds, it's probably comic book nerds.
It's hard to imagine anyone worse than internet TV nerds.
But I feel like maybe there are.
Maybe I'm just more used to comic book nerds.
Maybe. I think he more or less delivered the goods, you know?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, there
absolutely.
Are very few people I've heard gripe about Avengers. And they usually, when they gripe about it, they do it in a good-natured way.
Yeah, yeah. He delivered on many levels, which we talked about. We enumerated. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. We talked about that.
Now, Abrams, if we can transition.
Yeah, it's a good slide.
Abrams slide. I think, you know, has had name recognition longer. But it's a weird, I feel like it's a weird name recognition.
Yeah.
In so much as like, it isn't as though he's like proven. And as much as he's been involved in so many projects that have been, either groundbreaking might be too strong a word, but sort of like different than the norm, maybe is more what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So you know, obviously his first big success was Lost.
Well, I think I think that's what got his name out there. But I think I think Alias was pretty successful before Lost.
It was
the TV show.
But I don't think in the like Alias in to me was successful, but in the way that, you know, any TV show can be successful.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think...
Lost.
And, you know, to be completely honest, I only saw maybe one or two episodes of Alias.
Yeah,
if,
I've never seen
if
it.
If that.
I don't know.
But from what I understand, from what people have told me, Alias is not... it's not a good show. it has a following, but I think it maybe is more traditional in terms of a like a thriller drama kind of thing. Whereas Lost, and not to say that he was like the major creative force behind Lost, but he was one of them, and he kind of put that show on a certain trajectory that ended up being, you know, a huge success and completely changed the landscape of serial televised drama from that point to now. I mean, we're still getting Lost knockoffs now.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost 10 years ago did Lost start.
Yeah. Yeah, he sort of, he kind of pulled the rug out from under reality TV and
yeah, game exactly,
shows
yeah.
and sort of brought it back to high concept TV.
And so he, you know, he has that recognition. He does, you know, I shouldn't take anything away from Alias because that was a really successful show.
Yeah.
And well, so he had that.
But I think he had a lot of little things before that. Well, so did Joss Whedon. I was looking at credits and stuff, and Joss Whedon was a writer on a lot of things.
Yeah,
like
yeah
Toy
yeah.
Story and stuff. I think he wrote for The Simpsons too, didn't he?
Everyone did.
Yeah.
Everyone you love did.
So, and Abrams, he was a producer going back into the early 90s on a lot of like dramas and stuff. And Felicity was actually his first show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which
another
I totally
huge
forgot
success.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah, big success. I never watched it. But so, yeah, I think he had a lot of stuff under his belt. But Lost is probably where it shifted from being like, okay, you can do this successfully to being you can do anything with a certain degree of success.
I will bet that Alias... like Alias got him recognition within the industry as far as like this is a guy that can make a show work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then things like Lost were given to him to make work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Lost, you know,
without his influence, Lost probably
it would be a different
more likely would have been a hard sell.
Yeah. And so I think with Alias he got name recognition in the industry, then Lost gave him recognition beyond, you know, just industry. Like, people knew the name J.J. Abrams.
Right.
And then you could start to, like, use that as a selling point for various things. So then you have him getting, you know, producer credits and that being a prominent part of the marketing of that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first one I can think of is Cloverfield,
yeah.
Which I wouldn't be surprised if most people think he directed.
Yeah, I think he's more closely associated with it than
Drew Goddard.
Drew Goddard and Matt. Was Matt Reeves the writer on it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and this is another thing that I think has sort of become his shtick. Probably starting with Lost,
yeah,
is the sense that he's not going to reveal anything until he's ready.
Yeah, you know? Well, what totally lines up with that is his TED Talk. Have you ever watched his TED Talk?
Mm-mm.
He gave a TED Talk where he basically talks about this thing that he has called a mystery box, and it's something he applies to now. I guess now to everything he does, where when he was a kid. He either bought or his grandpa bought, someone got this literal thing called a mystery box, and it's a box with a question mark on it. And you bought it, and you don't know what's in it.
Uh-huh.
And he has never opened it.
Oh, nice.
Because to him, like, nothing will meet, you know, what his imagination, like, sees in that box. What it could be is much more interesting to him than what it is.
Yeah.
And so he talks about how... his endeavors in film and TV have always centered around this concept of, you know, mystery and what's, you know, what you think you want to know or what, you know,
yeah,
what is intriguing in that way. So, I mean, obviously Lost is like the mystery box concept turned into a TV show, right? Because Lost was all about mysteries and many of them widely regarded as unanswered.
Yeah.
In an unsatisfying way,
yeah.
For a lot of people,
and Cloverfield's the same way.
And Cloverfield, exactly,
it's exactly the same way. I mean, you have it gives you answers. It he does a great job of he won't reveal the same information that everything else reveals. Let me rephrase that. So the trailer for Cloverfield is amazing. I think it's literally like one scene, and it's just like a bunch of people. Chaos,
it's obnoxious
explosions.
Initially. It's that party.
Yeah, those people. Yeah,
that you're
those
like, Bacardi God, I hate people. These people. Yeah.
And then there's an explosion, and you see debris in New York, and everybody runs out into the street, and the Statue of Liberty's head rolls into the street. Right.
Yeah.
You know nothing about what this movie's about.
Right.
You know, it could be an alien invasion. Could be a terrorist attack. Could be any of these kinds of storylines, and you don't know any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Most movie trailers would tell you at least what is causing the problem.
Right,
you know, you would know 30 seconds into the trailer. Yeah. It's aliens. It's, you know, an attack from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be something to tell you that. He doesn't give you that in the trailer.
He doesn't give it to you in the movie.
He answers it to a certain degree, but he doesn't give you all of the answers.
Yeah.
So it's a really good staggered reveal where what you would normally get 100% more from a trailer than what he gives you at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
So, but he gives you enough to tell his story.
Yeah.
And that's all he gives you. He doesn't give you anything else.
And he's, I think, as much interested in character as he is mystery.
Yeah.
Like, he's, I think...
And that's important, too, because that's what separates him from people like Shyamalan, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
who's
exactly.
not interested in character, who's just interested in switcheroo.
Right, right. So Cloverfield is really closely associated with him.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what the first... Oh, Mission Impossible 3, which I didn't see, I think is the first movie he directed.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Star Trek came before... Yeah, Star Trek, the Star Trek relaunch... was his
and I think by that point he was already a name, you know, like he was that was
well I remember it being a semi-big deal when he got attached to that, you know.
I think that the success of it just sort of like solidified his place, you know.
Yeah,
I think at that point he still could have maybe foundered, you know.
Yeah,
like he could
have botched it.
If that had failed, then maybe his directing career wouldn't have been as a sure thing as it is now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he did Star Trek and he did a really great job with it. And then, did he do anything?
Well, he's had a ton of TV stuff.
But what about
stuff that he's produced? But movie-wise, really, Star Trek, Super 8, and
Super 8.
Mission Impossible are the only
and
things
Super
that
8,
he's done.
You know, was a pretty, like, I mean, no one really talked about it, you know?
No, it kind of faded away.
Well, and it was one of those things, like we were just saying, how he got to a point where now he can do sort of the things he wants to do, and basically he wanted to make a Spielberg film.
Yeah.
You know, like the ones that he loved growing up and watching in the 80s and stuff like that. And so that Super 8 is like a huge, you know, homage to a Spielberg film or a Richard Donner film, you know, from that era where you're following these kids in an extraordinary situation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's successful on some levels and not successful on others, but...
But it was not, I wouldn't call it a failure by any stretch.
Oh, no, no. And then Star Trek Into Darkness, right? Which is the next Star Trek movie, which I saw like a 10-minute preview of recently. And it's on par. I mean, if that 10 minutes is indication of what we're going to get.
Was that consecutive scenes? Like, was that just
I think so.
A full sequence or whatever?
I believe so, yeah.
Interesting.
I am assuming that it's just a chunk of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And it was pretty awesome. I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't interested in the next Star Trek movie, but I wasn't excited about it.
Yeah.
And now I'm excited about it.
That's good.
Having watched that. And so, I think he's, you know, he's up there now. He's got his approach works. I really do think that his mystery kind of aesthetic works well. And I think the problem is that people don't understand that he is not necessarily interested in answering the questions he poses.
Right.
You know, he, as proven by his own words, he is more interested in the mystery.
Yeah.
Not knowing, you know.
Yeah.
And sort of like conjecture and
creating a believable environment to introduce those questions.
Which is, you know, it's funny because I think back to Lost and when Lost was on, and this huge community rose up around Lost that was made up of people pausing every scene in Lost and looking for clues, and every document that appeared on screen was scrutinized, and like... It was so much fun to like theorize and try to, you know, figure out what's going on. Immensely more fun, I think, than knowing in the end what certain things were about.
Right.
Because you're sitting there watching that show, and you know, if you're just watching the show and you're not going beyond it, that's fine too. It's fine as it is on its own. But there's so much, you were rewarded so heavily by digging into it and becoming a part of that community that is trying to figure out what's going on. And literally, like, you would, a document, like someone's tax information would be in a scene, right? And in the age of DVR and stuff, you could pause it. And people would get screen grabs, and then people were like, oh, look, you know, their social security number is the same as this number, so that must mean that these two people are connected or whatever. And it was so much fun. And it is startling to me how many people sort of loathe that show now because they feel like it didn't pay off in the end.
Did not live up to that.
And I'm like, the whole point of this show was for you to be excited about the show.
Right.
Like, and just because the ending didn't...
Enjoy each episode, not just the answer at the end of
like,
the last one.
I don't understand people who are like, well, the ending ruined the entire thing for me. It's like, what do you mean? The journey was amazing, you know? Uh-huh. You had this shared experience with millions of people. And just because, like, it wasn't what you thought it was in the end, like, now you write the whole thing off?
Yeah.
It's insane to me.
You mentioned earlier talking about Whedon and Whedon. Some of the
Whedon.
his following.
Ah, yeah.
Not being quite the same following as the Dark Knight, for example, which made me think of another name that I don't know if it was associated with the hunt for a director, but it's certainly Christopher Nolan is certainly.
What if he directed Star Wars?
Oh man.
God, I'd be incredible. I mean, like, I'm interested in Star Wars 7, of course. Like, I want to go see it.
Yeah.
But that would significantly drop if he were directing it.
I was going to say the same thing, and I thought, that's going to sound too harsh, you know?
Like I
would definitely
and we have made clear our bias towards his filmmaking abilities.
Yeah.
I mean, so the movies he's made, Memento, right?
Yeah.
Which is a cool movie. It's not. I think it's very highly regarded.
I think it's too highly regarded.
I agree. I mean, I think it's a.
I think that speaks of Nolan right there.
Sure,
to me.
Sure.
Too highly regarded. I think he's overrated.
It's a cool
period.
The movie Memento is a cool idea. You know, it's a movie that essentially plays backwards, and
right.
You are as confused as the protagonist in the movie as to what's happening, and it is fun to sort of watch it unravel and kind of figure out why things happened the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the end, it feels like a gimmick.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a cool way to tell a story, but it's not a good story.
Like if
it's just not an interesting
Shyamalan
story.
Had made Memento, all of his movies after that would have gone backwards.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So Memento, I thought was good, but not. I don't think it was as deserving of the praise that it got. You know?
Yeah. Same here.
What are his other?
Insomnia, which I
was really disappointed by.
What's that about?
And I saw it solely on the name Nolan. Like, I thought, uh-huh. Okay, well, Memento was an interesting thing. Insomnia was about, I think, a murder investigation or kidnapping investigation. It stars Al Pacino. And he goes, and I think it also has, what's her name? Hilary Swank, maybe.
Oh, okay.
And Al Pacino has insomnia. And I guess this shows you how much I like the movie. All I can remember is that he couldn't sleep and that affected maybe his perception of like what was going on. I think Robin Williams might have been in it.
Oh, okay.
But it was more straightforward in terms of style.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't there was no gimmick.
Yeah.
I don't think.
Although unless you consider the insomnia part to
that
be
was just
a gimmick.
Annoying. Like there's one scene where he's trying to sleep and because he's in Alaska. That's what it is. He's in Alaska and he can't sleep because it's the time of year in Alaska where there's no nighttime, where the sun's out all day.
All the time.
So there's kind of a gimmick.
Yeah.
But it's based on a real thing, so you can't get too upset about it. But there's a scene where he's trying to go to sleep, but he can't because it's daylight. So he's like trying to cover all the windows and stuff and having a hard time of it. And I was just like, God, this is tedious.
That I think also sort of applies to a certain degree with his stuff.
So did
that
he,
it gets tedious
did
after
he do
a
the
while.
Prestige next?
Well, he did. Batman Begins came after Insomnia.
Oh, man.
And we kind of talked about his whole run on Batman.
From Memento, like, as far as I'm concerned, he's just on like a downward trend.
Well, I will say, I think that The Prestige is...
So I haven't seen that. Yeah.
And that's probably what I would say is his best movie.
I hear it's a great...
It's not
great.
It's
well,
not
I just
perfect.
Hear it's good.
It's not flawless.
Good
it's
movie.
Good. It's a good movie. Yeah. 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 That's the thing. If he had made nothing else, if he had just made The Prestige, mm-hmm. I would have a whole lot more respect and interest in his
yeah.
career.
You would find
from
it
here
a
on
much
out.
More prestigious career.
Get out.
So he did Batman then, Begins, which was, you know, hugely well received. I mean, he then that was probably the movie that at least started his broader name recognition, right?
Yeah.
Like he Batman fans the world over were like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's back.
Because they'd been, you know, Schumachered for so long that they were very happy to see a gritty, realistic take.
Right, yeah.
As much deserved by Batman.
Yeah. And then the other one, the other big factor there, I mean, he's had a steady climb, I think, with maybe The Dark Knight Rises being a step back.
Well, hang on. You're skipping over stuff here.
Well, all right.
Batman Begins, then he does The Prestige.
Right.
And then he does Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Which, meteoric. Like, if Batman Begins, you know, made him, like, popular, Dark Knight Rises made him, like, I don't know, deified by by the comic book community.
That's exactly what I was saying. he's had a steady rise from that point.
But I would say it was like a huge jump.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Dark Knight, like, bam, huge.
Okay.
Because it brought haters like me over, you know? Like, I was like, this is a great film.
Oh,
now,
okay.
How much of that, if I really look at it, a lot of that is down to Heath Ledger.
Yeah. Other factors in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dark Knight Rises, big success. Inception.
Also huge. Maybe not quite as big.
I think that got a lot of success on his name.
It did. Yeah. Well, and that is, I think, where you get the Christopher Nolan movie. That's where Inception is,
now
where the Christopher Nolan era began.
Yes.
You know, before that, he was sort of riding on Batman. You know, he was. It was like he's
on his back.
He can make Batman work.
Yeah,
that's what this guy can do.
The guy can make Batman work.
And then with Inception, it was like he can
make
stuff
love a Christopher Nolan movie
work. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And I will give Inception a lot of credit for being an original story. It was something that he'd wanted to make for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a compelling story.
I think it's layered in a, and I just realized the sort of pun in that, but it is, you can get something out of it if you look beyond the surface, like, story.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of interesting discussion around the movie.
Yeah.
Even if the movie itself was not, like, it absolutely has its flaws.
Sure.
But it's a cool, you know, filmically, it's a really cool movie in terms of, like, what you see on screen.
Yeah.
Like, it's fun to watch, I think.
Yeah.
But I also think that it was a step down in terms of his, I think not everyone was really satisfied with Inception. I think it gets plenty of flack.
Yeah. Well, again, it gets tedious, you know?
Yeah.
He
totally,
just sort of
yeah.
pushes it further than he should.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. He goes one layer too deep.
He does.
And then Dark Knight Rises, right?
Right.
Which, you know, I don't think you and I are totally alone in our criticisms or disappointment in that movie.
Of Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I think we're, if anything, the one where we're maybe not quite in sync with everybody else is Dark Knight. I think there's a much broader appreciation of that movie. I think there are more people who see the flaws in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
I think there's more widespread skepticism about that one than there is about The Dark Knight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we're more or less right on target with our assessment of
target.
Dark Knight. You're too close.
Stay on target.
Of Dark Knight Rises. I think we've got that one.
But he is now his name is used to sell movies. Man of Steel is being marketed with his name. You know, from the producer that brought you, right? And so he's a. I wonder if his, what's the word? I wonder if that will endure based on the success of Man of Steel. Because he's now, I think he's sort of set up at this point as the kind of steward of the DC movie properties in a way. You know, I think that
right.
those things are going to start to pass through his hands in one form or another as they kind of chart their way to the Justice League movie.
Yeah, I wonder.
It, much in the same way that I think Whedon is sort of the same role for Marvel. Like he's
the creative director.
Behind that set of movies.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I do wonder. I think he has sort of one crapshoot left in him.
Yeah,
I feel like he can kind of, coming off of Dark Knight Rises, he can do something a little bit weird,
yeah.
and it can still maybe falter a little bit.
But he'll have to follow it with something.
Yeah, he'll have to be amazing.
Yeah.
Like a Pee-wee's Big Adventure remake or something.
Oh, gritty, gritty.
Yeah.
Imagine the I'm a loner Dottie line.
Oh.
In his version.
I don't want to think about it.
I'm a loner Dottie. A rebel.
I'll take your questions.
Is it a virus?
We don't know.
How does it spread? Is it airborne?
Airborne is a possibility. We don't know.
Is this an international health hazard or a military concern?
Both.
Are these people alive or dead?
Hold them back!
We don't know.
Is that true?
There's a man going around taking names. And he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody will be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers.
I have to go from here to Zack Snyder.
That's a logical leap.
And there's a commonality between all of these directors that are becoming, you know, sort of it directors, like names that you can sell movies on. And that commonality is the nerd culture from which their biggest successes are born. You know, so you have Whedon tied to Avengers. You have Abrams tied to Star Trek and now Star Wars. You have Nolan tied to Batman, and Zack Snyder is, you know, from the get-go has been tied to sort of nerd properties. So was his first one the remake of Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah.
Which is a great movie.
I think. It's better than it has any right to be.
Exactly.
How about that?
Yeah.
And his aesthetic is clear.
I think his aesthetic is actually kind of held back, which is good. Like, in that movie, I feel like he was kind of timid.
Oh, he was somewhat restrained.
Yeah.
Well, I think that may be. But I guess, I mean, in comparison to what had come before, like, he makes a dramatic departure from the source material.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, know? Okay.
Like,
yeah,
he establishes that movie as its own entity.
Which I think is great.
Yeah. And it stands on its own.
Yeah. Then he did 300.
Yeah. Which I haven't seen.
I mean, I think
I haven't seen any of these movies. I've seen Dawn of the Dead. That's the only Zack Snyder movie.
300 was awful.
It looked pretty awful.
I am in the minority, but I really didn't like that movie.
Is there anything to it other than yelling and fighting? Because that's the impression that you get from it.
It's, well, I shouldn't. I mean, like, you know, I don't know what other people get out of it, but I saw little. I think as a comic, it's probably fine. But as a movie, I just had no reason to like anyone in it, for me. And I think it would have been maybe 30 minutes shorter if there hadn't been so much slow motion And it's like, I think they sort of pad it out with that.
It's 300
it's
minutes
long.
It's
kind
right?
of grotesque, but not in a good way. Like, it's just the I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Do you think it? Here's a question for you. Do you consider it gratuitous in any way? Not necessarily just violent or whatever, but do you?
Stylistically,
to me, yeah,
I
was
going to
say it seems to me the look of it reminded me too much of Sin City,
yeah.
Which was a case where I liked the concept and I like some of the people in it, and in small doses I think it works, but it does feel like it's a stylistic indulgence.
300 seems like a movie made by a cinematographer, not a movie made by a director.
Hmm.
You know, someone who basically wanted to make beautiful frames.
Mm-hmm.
And that's up for, you know, subjective assessment.
Sure.
I mean, I personally don't think it was beautiful.
Right.
But
well,
it,
and
the,
there
it's
could
all,
be value in that too, but
I think it's all style.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I just didn't, it didn't jive with me. And after 300, what did he do next?
He did Watchmen after that.
So Watchmen,
which I'm still sort of surprised I haven't seen.
But. Watchmen has the same problems as 300 in that it's overly stylized.
Mm-hmm.
What saves Watchmen in the end is the source material.
Sure.
You know, and even then, I think if I hadn't read Watchmen before seeing it, I don't know that I would have gotten... the thing about Watchmen is I also knew the context around which that comic was made and why it was such a huge... why it's a major milestone,
yeah,
in the comics, you know,
why
industry,
it's revered. Yeah.
And so I had that going into the movie, so I enjoyed the movie, I think, on that level. But it is overly stylized and tedious in parts. And again, like that story, I think works really well as a comic, where you have a certain pace that you expect or are willing to. Except, and as a movie, here's the thing. I don't ever think I'll watch it again.
Eh.
You know, I watched it the one time and that was enough.
That's it.
And if I ever want to go back to Watchmen, I'll read it.
Yeah.
You know? So what was after Watchmen? Then,
Legends of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
I need to see that. I need to see that movie. I forgot that he made that. Which is a CG film, right?
Flying
about owls. I love owls.
Yeah, I do too. They're awesome.
I need to see that. and then he did
Sucker Punch,
which was like, I didn't see it, but it, from all accounts,
it looked pretty horrible.
I've
and
heard
I think
it
performed a little underwhelmingly.
Well, I think it was kind of significantly.
Yeah.
From what I understand, it was a flop.
Yeah.
And I think it's the first time he was the creative force behind the content.
Ah.
I think he wrote it.
Oh.
Or rather, it's maybe the first time it was not based on an existing
property. Okay. Yeah, that's true.
And so is next the one Man of Steel?
Man of Steel.
So, the jury's out.
I don't think he's in anywhere near the same league as the other people we've talked
no,
about.
No, no, no. As a director, like, as someone who I think can make a good movie, I don't think he's in the same league.
Right.
But I think as a name that can sell movies, he absolutely is in the same league.
Hmm.
I mean, he has an aesthetic that people recognize. People loved 300.
Yeah, but how long can he? I feel like that's
he's
his,
still riding on
he's
it.
He's still riding 300, and I just wonder how
so
long.
So this
he can
might
do
be,
that.
You know, if man, well, this is his shot. Like Man of Steel is established. It's Superman, right? So
yeah.
He's already got people indoor there. He just has to keep them,
yeah.
Right? And he's got Nolan there.
Yeah, but for how long?
But for how long? I feel like we kind of, and we might be running up against time here,
Yeah.
But I feel like we should address Michael Bay.
Yeah, I guess he is a name, you know? He's right up there. He's easily as recognizable a name as J.J. Abrams.
Because he doesn't even have to direct movies anymore, even the ones he does direct. but I'm saying, like, I don't think he had anything to do beyond maybe a producer credit with Battleship.
Well,
that one, or is it called Battleship? The one based on the game?
Yeah.
But you would see that trailer and you're like, this is a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, that's the same thing as like J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but like with Cloverfield.
Yeah. Yeah, he's actually been a producer on a lot of stuff, probably more than any of these other guys have.
Give us a quick read off.
Well, okay. Well, he was a producer on both Armageddon and Pearl Harbor. Those were movies.
Did he
that
not
he,
direct
he
Armageddon?
Directed them, but he was also a producer. But he did all of the he was a producer on all of the mid 2000 horror remakes. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Amityville Horror.
Really?
The Hitcher.
They weren't really marketed as such, were they?
I guess in the press, maybe they were. Not in the promotion stuffs, but Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all of those were his company. Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff, but he's also directed a lot of movies too. And
he's prolific.
Yeah. And you know, for to his credit,
yeah,
I think he did a good job on some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Bad Boys and The Rock,
yes.
I think those are both good movies. Bad Boys 2 is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that's where it stops. And maybe that's because, you know, he had some restraint on those.
Yeah.
And ever since then, he hasn't.
Right.
But, you know, he also hasn't had really a flop other than maybe The Island. That that one with Ewan McGregor and what's her face?
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Hansen, yeah. Yeah. But other than that, I think everything he's done has worked, you know. People have paid to see it.
Yeah, I mean, he brings people into theaters.
Yeah.
Right? Like you hear, well, maybe not you. People hear about a Michael Bay film and they and you know what it is? Maybe it comes down to knowing what you're walking into, right?
Yeah.
With all these guys that are sort of becoming the go-to directors of this era, right? With Michael Bay, you pretty much know exactly what kind of movie is gonna be, you know, coming out of that projector. with, you know, Whedon and Abrams, you know, in a sense, what to expect, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, not to go in with a whole lot of preconceptions.
Yeah,
more likely, right?
No, I think you're right. I mean, you get with Abrams, you know, you're gonna get. There's going to be something that's withheld.
Yeah,
you know? There's going to be a sense of mystery with Whedon. You know, there's going to be heart and
comic
some
relief,
comedic interplay. Yeah,
levity, I guess, is the right word for that.
Nolan, everybody is going to be very oppressively morose.
Yeah, you're going to have tedious, long, drawn out scenes of nothing happening. And incongruous plots.
And Zack Snyder, everybody's going to be naked and bulbous.
And slow-mo.
Yeah.
And shiny, smooth. Right?
Yeah.
And with Bay, explosions.
It's going to blow up and you're going to see it from every angle.
Yeah, and it's going to move slow and fast and like this camera's going to be too close and... and you can count on him to say he won't direct the next one, but that he will.
And then he will, yeah. He's attached to the next Transformers, Bad Boys 3.
What?
Yeah.
We're going to get a 3?
Apparently.
We finally get our Bad Boys trilogy?
Rumored.
Oh, it'll better happen it's at
rumored.
This point, right?
We're finally going to get a Bad Boys trilogy.
Is Martin Lawrence, I thought he was arrested at some point.
Oh, maybe, but that I'm sure that won't stop.
Yeah.
Anything. Maybe that's why it's a rumor, until he's out of jail.
Maybe it'll be like Will Smith and his son.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're in that Shyamalan movie together.
The what?
The M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Shyamalan. I was like...
Isn't that how you say his name?
I think it is, but I was thinking, like, that's the title of it.
Shyamalan. It will be the next one. He was a name for a while.
He was.
And
he
now
was.
He's a name that you put his name on there and people groan.
It's, yeah, derisively used. Yeah, he was once, you know, talked about as the next Spielberg. I mean, that's how, think about how absurd that was, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember being really pissed off about it, too, when that happened. Mm-hmm. And there are definitely facets of his career that I like. I think he has made good movies. He's made decent movies. You know? But again, it was like this thing where everybody sort of put their eggs in one basket with him.
He's another guy, too, where I enjoy kind of listening to him talk about movies and... Mm-hmm. And because he is a passionate movie maker,
yes,
you know, and I think unfortunately he became myopic in his approach and what he felt was expected of him,
yeah,
and that kind of I think ruined things.
What he needed to do was do his own thing, but surprise people, you know.
And not surprise people.
Right. Yeah, without surprising.
Yeah.
He needed to do a departure that was surprisingly entertaining.
Yeah.
And instead he didn't. He went with the rote route of... Oh. I just said the
M. Night.
Root.
M. Night.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with you?
He'll
have a triumphant return.
You think?
No. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think
he needs to go underground for a while, not really doing anything.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, there are no indications that that's going to happen because he does have this big
he keeps
sci-fi
working. That's
thing.
The thing, too. He keeps
Despite
working.
His failures.
Yeah, well, his failures still make money. That's the fascinating thing, that he somehow is still able to make money on his
Which
movie.
Is true of so many...
Failures? they continue to make money? Yeah.
In Hollywood.
Oh, totally. I mean, you have to get to a certain point, like, well, that's the thing. It you can fail as much as you want as long as you're making money.
Yeah.
You know? You can be Michael Bay and be derided constantly.
Yep.
Or you can be Eddie Murphy, you know?
Yeah.
As long as people will pay to see your movies, then
it
works.
Yeah.
But if nobody's paying, then
sorry.
You could make the greatest movie ever, but...
Yeah.
You're not making another one because you didn't make money.
We're going to come back to this kind of thing, right?
Yeah, well, I feel like we still have a whole bunch of people that we need to talk about, you know, in different, maybe different facets.
This is like director's part one. But we got some other groupings I think we want to analyze.
Yeah, we'll get to them.
At some point.
Yeah.
Down the road.
Wow.
Oh, we didn't even... Put it in the archive before we get into trailer culture.
Wow.
Paging Mr. Herman. Mr. Herman, you have a telephone call at the front desk.